Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live monthly on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight's half-hour episode, How to Avoid Some Really Bad Decisions in 2015, is a really timely one given all the really bad decisions we saw people make very publicly in 2014. So I thought it would be very relevant. Now, first, for anyone wanting to ask a question or make a comment, just dial 1 on your phone and you'll be in line to join me live on the air. And don't be shy. I like questions. I like this to be a conversation. And I think I'll just take them as I go. It's a half an hour show and it's just me talking. So we'll have time for questions or comments. I'd like to share with you that the inspiration for this episode was the very, very sad, unfortunate Michael Brown shooting. My assessment of the situation was that there were very bad decisions made all around on all sides. So it would be a perfect example of bad decisions. And the thing that really kicked it off for me was one of the legal analysts making a remark saying, we're all only one bad decision away from a life-changing event. And my feeling was, well, that can be true in some very major things like getting into a car and driving drunk home from a party, really extreme things. But it's not usually true. In my experience, most decisions happen in thousands and thousands of tiny separate pieces, one building upon another over time. And that people don't realize this, that decisions really are cumulative. And as some examples, disconnection in a marriage. Often couples will point to one or two key events that made for disconnection, but when we analyze things, there were thousands of decisions small and large that happened daily that contributed to the disconnection. Financial instability regarding overspending isn't usually one person comes home with a giant yacht or a hot tub, or makes one big expense unilaterally. It's often a pattern of not paying attention to the big picture. Poor health related to neglect. Very often people will think, well, I didn't get that biopsy and I should have gotten that biopsy. But if you backtrack it, generally before the biopsy, there were many decisions that may have led to your poor health. You're not paying attention to the amount of sugar you're having, or are you exercising? How are you managing stress? So I think the first thing that I would like listeners to pay attention to is the fact that bad decisions are not usually singular events. They're usually cumulative events happening over a long period of time. And one thing I would like to clear up that really, really gets to me is to make a distinction between what we call a bad decision and a mistake. And we all hear this all the time in the media. A politician cheats on his wife, he gets caught, and he says he made a big mistake. A businesswoman omits some revenue on her taxes and says something similar to the IRS. Or a son lies to his mother and later fesses up to his, quote, mistake. And in truth, these examples aren't mistakes. They're bad decisions. Selecting the wrong answer on a test is a mistake. Not studying for that test is a bad decision. The mistake was something you did without intention, while the bad decision was made intentionally, often without regard for the consequence. And it's really easy to dismiss your bad decisions by reclassifying them, as we see so many people do all the time, reclassifying them as mistakes. It kind of takes the edge off. It softens the blow. But it's much worse than that. Reclassifying a bad decision as a mistake, it removes your sense of responsibility. It makes it no longer your fault. And it's a lot easier to live with your bad decisions if you feel like they aren't your fault. Consequently, you're more likely to make the same bad decision over and over and over again if you simply consider it a mistake. Such behavior is, by definition, insanity. If you keep doing the same thing over and over again and you get the same old result, that's what's called insanity. So I would like to clarify, I think one tool that, you know, it's a kind of tool that you can use is to make the distinction between a mistake and a bad decision. We all make mistakes, and we all make bad decisions. They're part of the human experience. We can celebrate our mistakes. Failure is often the key to success if you learn from it. And we can learn from our bad decisions. But let's not confuse one with the other. You're less likely to learn from a mistake if you feel like you had nothing to do with it. It kind of just happened to you. So if you get into a car and you're drunk and you are the driver, that's not a mistake. That's a really, really bad decision. If you have an affair, that's not a mistake. And I often hear partners classify affairs as, well, I made a mistake. That's not a mistake. You did that intentionally, even if it would have happened in an impulsive way. You made an impulsive decision consciously. Unless you're on drugs or unless you have some kind of organic brain damage, you made a bad decision. So the first tool I would encourage you to use is to make the distinction between what is a mistake and what's a bad decision. Now, I'd like to say a little bit about the key ingredients that go into bad decisions. I think it's really important to understand what's the setup for it, because you're less likely to make them if you understand the setup. Anxiety, stress, and fear, emotions that are part and parcel of all critical situations, can really, really distort our choices. Stress is, you know, it's a part of everyday life. Everybody experiences stress, but stress does an interesting thing. It makes us more prone to tunnel vision, less likely to take in the information we need. We don't see the long view when we're under stress. We can't see beyond the edge of our nose. And not seeing the long view, not taking in the information we need, is a really critical component, a critical setup for making bad decisions. So be very mindful about situations that are stressful. I work with clients all the time to try to help them anticipate stress, because if you go into a stressful situation blind and you haven't done your homework, you haven't prepared for it, when it's something repetitive and something you could anticipate, like Christmas with very, very difficult, cranky relatives, you're more likely to just look at the immediate moment and not take in the long view and look at what kind of decisions do I need to make that will incorporate the long view. What do I want for myself and my family, et cetera, not only to manage this moment. Anxiety is another one. It makes us more risk-averse than we would regularly be, and much more impressionable to others' opinions, or more frozen in inertia. And I can tell you, inaction and passivity are forms of decisions. People tend to think that decisions are only about what we do, but decisions are very much also about what we don't do. So recognize that not taking action, for instance, let's say you find a lump in your breast, or a big lump on your toe, and it makes you so anxious, you just don't want to know what it is. It's too anxiety provoking. You do nothing. You're passive. So you don't get a biopsy. You don't go to a doctor to have it assessed. You are making a decision. You're making a bad decision by doing nothing. So a bad decision can be activity or inactivity, and anxiety really helps to set that up. So one tool that I'd like you to keep in mind, the first tool I'd like you to think about is to know how you're feeling in a particular situation. When we mindfully acknowledge our feelings, it serves as a kind of emotional thermostat that calibrates our decision-making. It's not that we can't be anxious. It's that we need to acknowledge to ourselves that we are, and to look at what do we tend to do when we're anxious. What's our default kind of automatic behavior? One of the things over time I've learned about myself is that when I'm anxious, I do one of or both of two things. I overfunction and I rush. I move too quickly. So I have had to learn the hard way that by moving too quickly, I once stabbed myself in the eye, quote, accidentally, trimming a rose bush because I was in a hurry, I was stressed, and I wasn't wearing goggles trimming rose bushes, which are full of thorns. So I stabbed myself in the eye. And to this day, I've been left with a nasty spider-like floater in my right eye. And when I look at it, I don't say, oh, poor me. I say, how foolish. You don't do gardening when you're stressed and in a rush. And if you are in a rush, you need to be aware, I'm stressed. Am I at risk for moving too quickly? I know when I'm in a rush or when I'm stressed, I tend to drive too quickly. And thank God I've avoided mowing down about four people in the last several years. And I'm ashamed to admit that, but I am more willing to look at the fact that, okay, what do you need to do if you're anxious or you're feeling stressed? How can you lower the temperature so you don't move so quickly, or so you don't do this kind of thing that sets you up for a really bad situation? In my case, I've been lucky. I never hit anybody, and I've adjusted my behavior. So tool number one is know how you are feeling and make an adjustment. It's also, I think, crucial to ask probing questions when in a critical situation. This is another tool. So when you're in a critical situation like a medical crisis, ask probing questions not only of the subject matter experts, but of yourselves. This is because we bring into our decision-making process flaws and errors of our own. We have a kind of tunnel vision. All of us show bias when it comes to information we take in. And what we do, it's interesting, we typically focus on anything that agrees with the outcome that we want. It's a kind of, I think, natural-born optimism that can set us up for some really bad decisions. I talk to my son about this a lot. He's a natural optimist, and in my opinion, he takes some risks that really could be life-threatening. Because he's young, and he feels like he can conquer the world, but he tends to look at outcomes that are consistent with his hopes rather than look at possible bad outcomes that could happen. Now, we're about halfway through the show, remarkably, and what I would like to do is take a brief commercial break to tell you about a service that I'm providing, and what I would like you to do is stay tuned. I'll be back for the regular program in less than a minute, and I will share with you some more tools, key tools to avoid bad decisions in 2015. I'd like to tell you about discernment counseling, which is a new service I'm providing. And in a nutshell, it's a brief intervention for couples who are on the brink of a divorce. I'm the only clinician in New Hampshire who's providing this service. I have taken the training. I'm now doing the advanced training, and I'm now on the National Registry for Discernment Counselors. And it's a 1-to-5 session short treatment for couples where one partner is leaning out toward a divorce, feeling very discouraged and hopeless, and the other partner has more energy to work on the marriage or the relationship. You don't have to be married for this. And it's a very useful form of treatment because it moves couples toward a more confident and clear decision whether to stay in the status quo, move toward a split, or do the work of reconciliation and repair. And it's a very, very useful form of treatment because it helps people get off the fence. And if people decide to stay in the status quo, they go off and do their own thing, and then maybe later decide to do something different. If they decide to split, the clinician refers them to the appropriate either divorce professionals or people who can help them make the most healing split possible, conciliatory divorce or split possible. If they decide to move toward reconciliation and repair, then the couple, either with me or with another clinician, signs on to do 6 months of regular couples therapy and with divorce off the table or a split off the table for that time. And 6 months is enough time to know where you're at in terms of possibilities. And it's really a very effective form of treatment, and it better serves couples we call mixed agenda couples. So if you're in a situation where you or your partner is leaning out, one of you is leaning out and the other is leaning in, rather than do traditional couples therapy, which mirrors the pursuer's role, I would recommend that you go to my website, SusanLager.com, read the page about discernment counseling, and feel free to contact me at 603-431-7131. I'd be glad to talk to you about the possibility of doing this work. And by the way, it's much cheaper than a divorce. It's not cheap, but it's infinitely cheaper and less exhausting and depleting than a divorce. It can really move you toward better decisions. And I thought it would be key to mention that in this program. Okay, back to our regular programming. And I'd like to talk about some more tools to avoid bad decisions. I began to talk about being aware of our natural born optimism because that harms good decision making. The neuroscientist Tali Chereau conducted a study in which she asked volunteers what they believed the chances were of various unpleasant events occurring, events like being robbed or developing Parkinson's disease. She then told them what the real chances of such an event happening actually were, and what she discovered was really fascinating. When the volunteers were given information that was better than they hoped or expected, say, for example, that the risk of complications in surgery were only maybe 10% when they thought it was 30%, they adjusted closer to the new risk percentages presented. If it was worse, they tended to ignore this new information. And this can explain why smokers often persist with smoking despite the overwhelming evidence that it's bad for them. If their unconscious belief is that they won't get lung cancer, for every warning from an anti-smoking campaigner, their brain is giving a lot more weight to that story of the 99-year-old lady who smokes 50 cigarettes a day but is still going strong. So be aware that denial is a very strong thing. Pay attention to what may be, a kind of insane optimism. Really notice your optimism. And are you feeling optimism in spite of the facts? Are you taking in all the facts, the possibly bad ones as well as the good ones? And I would also encourage you to avoid the tendency to incorrectly process challenging news and, as I said, to actively push yourself to hear the bad news as well as the good. When we find data that supports our hopes, we appear to get a dopamine rush. It's kind of similar to the one we get if we eat chocolate, if we have sex or fall in love, but it's often information that challenges our existing opinions or wishful desires that yields the greatest insights. The dangerous allure of the information we want to hear is something we need to be much more vigilant about. So take in the bad news and the potentially bad news as well as the good news, and you will make better decisions. Now, I'm going to talk about what I consider probably the most important tool. Take the long view. So if you think about what I said earlier, that most bad decisions happen cumulatively, I would encourage you to practice what I call the 10-10-10 exercise. Maybe you've heard about it. It's as you're about to make a decision, any decision that feels weighty. So let's say you decide to maybe overspend on a vacation or dip into your 401k or your savings, or you decide to have sex with someone on the first date, or to take a job when you're a little kind of mixed about it, you're a little ambivalent about taking that job, I would encourage you to think about it in a 10-10-10 way. And it goes like this. First, think about, if I make this decision, how am I likely to feel in the next 10 hours? Okay? So that's kind of pushing it out a little bit. All right? Then ask yourself, how am I likely to feel in 10 weeks? You could do 10 months, but I would encourage you 10 days or 10 weeks. So you're pulling it out, and you're allowing yourself to think about, how is this going to unfold? How is this going to play out in a more long-term scenario? Then the final 10 I would invite you to think about is, what's the likely impact of this decision in 10 years? So if you did 10 weeks, do 10 months. But in other words, 10, 10, 10. The immediate impact, and usually the immediate impact if you you're making a decision is, oh, this is going to feel great. But allow yourself to take the long view and really look at the long-term possible effect of this decision. That's one tool to take, taking the long view and really looking at the impact of a decision. Another tool that you can use is to look at your patterns. So let's say you have a complaint. My husband and I are really disconnected, or whenever we fight, it seems to go, whenever we argue or disagree, it seems to lead to a fight. Instead of thinking about one situation that caused it, because people are usually pretty clear about the immediate precipitant, the straw that broke the camel's back, and they tend to overvalue that, I would encourage you to take the long view going backwards. What were the decisions that I made? And I'd like you to think about me, I made. What did I do? Because that's the only thing you can change, that is your own behavior. What did I do in the recent past that was kind of like this decision or contributed to this decision? So let's say you're in a real crunch financially. Instead of thinking, well, I didn't get my paycheck on time, you might want to think about, well, is there something that I did before not getting my paycheck on time that may have set up a crisis? And what did I do most recently? Is there something I did not so recently that may have helped to set this up? And something I did, 10, 10, 10, going backwards, maybe 10 months ago that set up this decision. So you can use the 10, 10, 10 exercise going forward or going back. And I would say you will do much better with all your decisions in 2015 if you use these tools, and if you especially pay attention to cumulative decisions. If you are curious about what are, let's assume that there were 1,000 decisions that went into the disconnection in my marriage. What are, can I think about 10 that I may have made most recently that contributed to the disconnection in my marriage? You will less likely have magical thinking it just kind of popped up overnight or it happened to you. You will less likely feel like a victim, and you will feel infinitely more empowered to make better decisions. You to be curious about, all right, if I made those bad decisions last week, the week before, maybe last month, what do I need to do differently? If I could do one thing differently now, what would it look like? So if we take Christmas, for example, if over the last 5 Christmases or Hanukkahs, you were with family and it went really badly, and you ended up getting into a big conflict with relatives, and maybe you stormed out or they stormed out, I would encourage you to think about your, where was I in the problem? That's a great tool. Where was I in the problem? Where am I in the solution? So instead of thinking, well, we all drank too much or we stayed too late, be thinking about your own part. And what historically have I done that may have contributed? And then fast forward. What might I need to do differently to prepare for a better Christmas or better Hanukkah? And I can't say I can guarantee, but I can say with some assurance that you will do better. You will do better through the holidays, and you will do better in 2015. So I hope this has been helpful to you. These are the insights that I've gathered not only from some of my own, not only stupid mistakes, but bad decisions, and knowing the difference between them and really being willing to look at it and look at it cumulatively, to take the long view, to take in the not-so-savory information as well as the pleasant information, to rein in my optimism, et cetera, and to notice my feelings. You know, what decisions did I make in an anxious or stressed state? So I would encourage you to do the same. Now, we're going to have to stop. There are no questions. I do have some callers here, so if you want to ask a question or make a comment, if you talk really fast, we would have time for it. No? Okay. Now, anybody who didn't have time, who couldn't make this call live, you can get the recording at blogtalkradio.com/Susan Lager. You can hear the recording, and you're welcome to, if you want to ask a question, you feel free to call me at 603-431-7131. Okay? I really welcome that. I want to thank my listeners. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hopefully you learned some things about what drives bad decisions and how to avoid more of them. And I'd just like to let you know that my next episode will be on Wednesday, January 7th, at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm quite sure I have a guest. I've been lining up, and I will be announcing that guest pretty soon. So I hope you all are better equipped now to have better holidays and to have a very, very happy New Year. Take care. Bye-bye.